Hey everybody, welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of LockBod. I'm joined today with the esteemed Kenny Pointer, Chief Strategy Officer for Mariner, or I think I got that wrong, it's Chief Services Officer, correct?
Correct, yes.
And I failed to ask you how you wanted to be introduced. Did I nail it? Is there anything more we need to add to that?
I think that's good. I mean, I'm sure we'll jump into a lot of other details, but I think that's a good intro.
I love it. So kind of tell me about what's a chief services officer do at Mariner, and kind of give me a high level of what you're doing currently and the work at Mariner.
Yeah. So for everyone that doesn't know, Mariner is a wealth management firm, and we're one of the largest wealth management firms in the nation. So from that perspective, we've had a lot of growth. And in the last couple of years, we decided, you know what, we need to make sure we continue to focus on service. So I oversee a lot of the back office components. So support, operations, service, technology, more technology now than before. But the reason I took on the chief service officer title is one of the value propositions of what we do is let's make sure that everything that we're doing, we're trying to provide a service. We're trying to lift our wealth advisor in this case and our clients versus what I've seen in my career, a lot of back office associates and things like that. It's more about how do I make my job more efficient? How do I make my life easier to process paperwork, whatever those things might be. So I thought it was pretty cool that we introduced this chief service component for someone that has oversight of support roles to really lift it into the value proposition of the organization, which is providing a service at the end of the day. So, which is cool.
That is very cool. So how long have you been at Mariner then?
I've been almost 6.5 years.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, it's a great journey. Started in late 2018. There's a lot of things that happened. And just from a size perspective, we were anywhere from between 15 to 20 billion in assets. And now we're probably going to close this year close to 255 billion plus. So that's a lot of growth in a short period of time.
That's quite substantial. So for both my curiosity, but also for perspective, and I think I've got a pretty good, but you say you're one of the largest wealth advisories, and I know this is nowhere near, but you're also talking about assets under management, so many billions in assets. Can you kind of compare the work that Mariner does to say something like a Blackwater, Bridgewater, or State Street that seem to end up in the news a lot or on TikTok on owning a lot of these different firms?
Yeah, and not to go into too much detail, but when we think about RIAs, I mean, it's a fiduciary model. And the thing that I like about it is it's much more focused on, the best interest of the client. So when you think about the process for us specifically and most firms in this space, the focus is on planning objectives and not as much, we're just talking investments, right? Investments is a component of the life cycle. It's really about the overall wellness of the client at the end of the day. And you make decisions as a fiduciary in terms of what's best for that client, which is an interesting model because I've been in both sides. So I've been in the traditional broker-dealer component, the wirehouses and those things, which are what I call, this is my own opinion. I feel like they're more like the assembly line, right? There's packaged products. You just take things off the shelf. You've got your scripts and all those things. And at Mariner, what I think makes us unique is that we really try hard to make sure that we let our advisors be who they are, because every relationship is unique. So for me, coming in as an operations and technology person, the easiest thing to do is create the assembly line, right? That's the easiest thing to do when you read books, you look at other organizations. But we get to have fun because at the end of the day, we put the client and our advisors first, and we make sure whatever we're doing, we're uplifting their value proposition, because really the stickiness of what we do is in that relationship, right? And the relationship isn't driven by how good I can process a piece of paperwork in 2 seconds at the back end. It's how well does the advisor interact with the client, and then how do we continually improve the efficiencies downstream? It's been a model that's worked well. Our retention rates are very, very high. I mean, extremely high. When you think about our clients and our advisors from that perspective. So that's where I think the model is a little different, is it's not as heavy in just investments, performance. It's more, are we helping you reach your goals as an individual from an advisor perspective. And we, my teams and what I do, we get to support that, right? That hence Chief Service Officer. And you'll see me do that because I don't really talk title much, but Chief
Sure.
Officer concept is ensuring that we link all that to the value chain. At the end of the day, everyone's a part of providing the overall service to the client. It's not, oh, you're just a person that processes paperwork on the back end. No, you're a part of the service value chain. You're part of the value of the organization, ultimately in serving our clients, which is great. And because I've been in a lot of environments where there's a tug of war. So I like to give stories around, when I've been in like institutionalized environments where it's a game. Like back office people love to say, how many errors can we find today? How many things can we ding this advisor on that we don't like? Because they're not nice to us or whatever else that might be. Versus no. Like how do we ensure the client at the end of the day is getting the experience that they need? It's not about how quickly we do our job, how quickly the advisor does their job, et cetera. It's one team. And that's why I enjoy being at Mariner, to be honest with you. Because it's harder. I know some of my peers, it's easier to build the assembly line. It's easier to, make everything exactly the same, packaged, all those things. But it's definitely challenging, but very rewarding.
That's exciting. I'm really excited for this interview too, I should mention, because even since you and I first talk over coffee, I found myself essentially quoting you a couple times, just some of the things that we talked about, some of the difficulties and expectations of, I remember at one point you mentioned a story. And you had mentioned, I asked specifically, and I'll ask again, how do people treat you when they find out what you do? Like, do you ever see almost kind of a personality shift?
Yes. You're gonna have to stop me on this one because I'll talk forever on this whole topic, but I think I told you this. There's a large percentage of people in my life, like family, friends, they don't know what I do. Like literally, I've known people for years that I'm just Kenny. I'm just the guy that goes and plays softball, helps maybe coach football or the things that I do outside of work. And it doesn't come up often because it's I told you this, and my work doesn't define my life. My work part of my life. And my life is bigger than my work. So when you think about that, I am who I am, right? I'm the most dressed up right now than you will typically see me. But the story I gave you was there's a couple stories. One, going to conferences, being part of some large organizations and attending, tech conferences and those types of things. There was one situation that was pretty interesting is I went and I was in the hotel lobby and I was just dressed, got off the plane, had a sweatsuit on. Yep, I don't travel with a suit. I had a sweatsuit on, and I'm sitting there, and there's a group of people preparing to meet with me, and I'm sitting right next to them, and they're like, "Okay, when Kenny Pointer comes, remember this is a big deal for us. We're trying to, lock him into, these different potential engagements or whatever else, and on behalf of the firm," and they're just game planning, and I'm sitting right there listening. I mean, they could see me. I'm sitting right there and I'm just smiling, listening. I'm like, okay. And then I get on the elevator and two of them are on the elevator with me and they're still talking about it because the happy hour meet and greet is coming up in 30 minutes to an hour and they're all ready and ready to go. And then I come down for the meet and greet and they just swarm me. How you doing? Da, da, da. And I'm thinking in my head, like I was right next to you guys the whole time. Right. And it's just so interesting how, the blinders get put on, right? People are looking for a certain type of individual, a certain type of look, a certain type of whatever else it might be. And the guy sitting right next to you that you're trying to impress, and you weren't able to take your blinders off enough to even recognize that, right? And there was multiple opportunities to do that, to create that connection. And I did know their boss, and she came up and I told her, and we had a good laugh about it. But she, you could tell, she was like, "All right, that's a learning lesson for us, for sure." But that's happened to me so many times in my career. So many times, I'll go to an event, I'll go to, or even recently, I'm like, I'm at Mariner, and the immediate reaction is, "Oh, you must work for someone or for someone else who worked for someone else," immediately, and I'm like, very humbly, I'm like, no, they all report to me. Really? Yeah. But now I don't say that in a way of like pumping my chest out, but just more of a, just so there's an understanding there from that perspective. And it's an interesting dynamic because, I don't try to be different. I just try to be who I am. And sometimes that's not the persona that's expected. And another story is just from a personal note. I've known some people for 10 plus years, and for some reason, they've decided to find me on LinkedIn, read my details after 10 years. And next thing you know, I'm getting phone calls. Hey, can we talk about some opportunities? I'm like, hey, bro, I've known you for 10 plus years. You've never come to me with an opportunity to do business or even inquire about potentially, helping each other out in more of the business sense, et cetera. Which is okay, but then all of a sudden those dynamics start to change and it becomes something a little different. I mean, even a year ago or so, I went and hung out with some buddies, and there was a guy there that was from a prominent wealth management firm, and we're talking, having a good time, just catching up or whatever else. And he mentioned something about more business related. And one of the guys said, you should talk to Kenny. And he's like, why? He's like, oh, Kenny's the chief whatever at Marriott. Conversation flipped and it became just this very awkward situation. I said, what happened? And I literally asked him this time. I was just like, what do you think I did? And he looked at me, he's like, I don't know, construction or MMA fighter or something. Like just like someone, did whatever else. And I just laughed. And like he couldn't, it was just interesting to watch him try to adjust as if he would have showed up different if he knew what I did for a living. But the cool thing is, in these situations, I get to learn a lot more about the realness of who people are. Because even in the situations I've known someone for 10 years, I know who they are. The person I'm talking to now is a component of who they are. Because I know who they are because I've known them for 10 plus years. And we've talked about actual life things. We've talked about actual, like, how's your family? How's things happening, or whatever else. Because when you get in that business conversation, it's a different discussion. So I'd like to think that, even in those situations when it does occur, it's not a bad thing. But I've had the opportunity to actually get to know who the people are before they ever flip that switch. And I think it gives me the opportunity to actually have a real conversation with them and not just a, oh, okay, you're positioning type discussion, if that makes sense. I like to call a corporate, I'm like a corporate chameleon. I don't understand. It's interesting, man. I show up and it's most people don't know who I am, and then once they find out who I am, it's a whole different ball game. And I try my best to say, what's changed? We're all human beings here. It's all like nothing should have been different in the first place at the end of the day.
Well, and it's fascinating too, because the thing that the first instance you described, and I think I asked it like this, it almost seems like it's not that there was any conscious effort or planning, or it was as if they saw you literally for the first time. And I think that's a fantastic dynamic that I guess never really fully considered. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that that would be the case in some instances, and it seems like a natural frustration, I guess, for lack of any better term. Just like you said, where it's like, hey,
And
we were
I used
acting one
to,
way before.
yeah. When I was younger, I used to take it as a frustration. Now I look at it as more of a, potentially is that a part of my purpose to be a little bit of a disruptor, right? And part of this conversation and why I was interested in doing this was coming to the realization of, being in a position that could potentially influence people or let people understand that you can be different. You can be who you are. You can be your genuine self and still be successful at the end of the day. And a lot of people struggle with that because they feel like they have to change who they are. They have to be something different to fit in to certain situations. And I'm still trying to prove it out, right? There's just this hard work, being a good human being, learning how to connect with people on a level that's effective and being able to influence. Can that supersede all the other norms and personas that have been created over time? And at the end of this journey, maybe I can be a use case that can prove some of that out, to be honest with you, because I can't explain it to you, to be honest. Like when I'm sitting here saying, it's not that I had some kind of secret sauce. I just, and I told you this, I just, I stay grounded in the things that I've always stayed grounded in, as I continue to go through this journey, no matter what level of success it is at the end of the day.
You had such a succinct way of putting it. You said there were two things you brought into every business you'd worked at, and we're kind of cheating a little bit. I need to go back at some point, but do you remember what the two things were you said? Because it was so succinct. I've been quoting it ever since because I've had people on the podcast. John Hall talks about be your most genuine self. Like that's the number one thing. And then Lindsay Howerton, she's a consultant for large businesses. And she says kind of the same thing too, being genuine and what's the other thing? Insecurity is like the biggest infection in businesses versus being genuine and open and being you.
I think for me, there's always two things I say at the core of anything is be a good human being, right? At the end of the day, just be a good human being, right?
Yeah.
Make good human being decisions, because I'll tell you, corporate America businesses, it'll test that, right? It'll test
Yeah.
the human component of who you are, and
Yeah.
it'll test you in a lot of ways. And people don't understand that as you get tested and as you go through those things, the decisions you make, it changes the trajectory of your path and potentially even who you are at the end of the day, because then maybe confusion sets in, right? So be grounded in who you are, meaning like, be a good human being at all times. And if it's work, if it's personal, if you're not the same person from that perspective, that's a problem. That's what I've told people too. And I'm gonna go different areas here, but like, imposter syndrome is something that continues to come up as I talk to others. And I mean, I've dealt with and continue to deal with at times. And I always tell them at the end of the day, you're the same person, you're the same human, you have the same traits. It's you may have to show up a little differently in how you may communicate in a certain setting, but you're not changing who you are. You're not changing the fact that at the core, you're still a human being. And at the core, you're still grounded in being a good human being. And that's just, I know it sounds simple. I really do. And it sounds like people might hear that and be like, that's of course, right? But I'm telling you, that gets tested. And especially as you continue to progress in your career, and in leadership, you get exposed to more. You see more how, I mean, for lack of a better word, how the sausage is made, right? And
Yep,
you get
yep.
exposed more to the things that have to happen within a business. And sometimes it's not a fit, or it's not a direct correlation to how you would do something as a human, right? Or at your core of who you are. So always stay grounded to that, because if you don't, you can lose yourself. It's
Yeah.
hard. It's hard to come back when you lose yourself. It's hard to come back when you wake up and realize I'm doing things in one part of my life that I would never do in the other part of my life. I'm doing things over here for work purposes that I would never do as a human in the things that matter to me more in my life. I would question that. I tell people there shouldn't be that big of a divide when you think about the core of who you are from that perspective. And if you find yourself even contemplating that, you need to take a step back and have that conversation with yourself. The other part is, put people first as a leader. I would say for me in my career, I think I told you this, at the end of the day, as I get old, maybe have grandkids, great grandkids, and they, what do you do for a living? And tell us about, at the end of the day, I'm not going to talk about a specific company. If I do, it's going to be tied to a journey of a specific person. And, for me, the thing I like to pride myself in is I've worked with a lot of people. And I've been in a lot of people's journeys where I feel like, okay, I've had a part in getting them to the part of their career where they need to be. And it's been a pretty successful journey. I mean, I'm gonna look back. I can already tell, I already have a long list of people that I've been able to interact with in my career or be in a position to help them or coach them or help lead them or whatever else that have gone on to do bigger things than I could ever imagine. You know, and just, you know, being a part of that journey, that's for me. If you keep your eye on that, success is inherent. Is that's how I can tell you my journey. Like for me, making sure that I take care of people first, make sure that I'm clearing the path. That's why I always call myself as a leader, and one of my strengths is I can help clear the path, and coaching people up. The results for your organization, it's very rare that we haven't achieved the results that we wanted in teams that I've managed because people are on. They're on a path. They feel like they're on a path of growth, and not just growth for the organization, but growth for themselves, right? At the end of the day. And I always tell people, like, when you work for me, you might not like me at the end of the day. You may hate me at the end of the day, but I guarantee you when our journey is done, you're gonna be a much better positioned person. And I can tell you'll still be a good human being with now more tools and resources available to continue your path at the end of the day. And I've got so many use cases of people that's happened to. I'll give you a great one. There's a local guy in Kansas City, and he's a tech guy like you, and he's got a startup. He's doing some crazy cool stuff. And I actually want to introduce you to him. Good guy. And his name's Lewis Bird. So I'm gonna if he sees that. Great guy. He worked for me at a company where he was a processor, and him and I met up probably 6 months ago or so. And it's so funny, we're just thinking about, you know, the journeys we've been on, and he's like, you fired me. I remember you told me, like, this is not for you. Like, you kept it real with me. And you know, for me, I've always been transparent with people because this guy was super creative, super talented, and I'm like, but he didn't do processing well. Like, you know, I'm just like, hey, instead of saying, you know what, just do better, keep processing, you'll get there, because it's for the greater good of the organization. I need you to there so that we can achieve our goal.
I need you to do three times what you're currently doing.
I basically looked at him and said, you're not good at this. And I even tried to get him some marketing stuff at that specific company, but you know, he told me, and I didn't even realize, and he told me, he's like, that was one of the biggest things for me. Like, you helped me. And it helped him, I think, get on his journey that he's been on now, and being an entrepreneur, being in all sorts of consulting type roles, and you know, doing all this stuff in the technology component, being creative. And if you ever read his, he writes a lot of great content and different things like that. And I was a part of his journey. Like, I sit back like, wow, you know, because I was just honest and transparent and more concerned with him as a person and his path versus the organization. I'll tell you something. Did that organization continue to meet their goals? Did that organization continue to do the things that we set forth for that year, for that month, et cetera? Absolutely. So, but now you also have an individual who's on a trajectory that is much more aligned, I think, with his purpose at the end of the day. And we sometimes as leaders spend too much time trying to get people to fit versus, like, let's focus on the person, because at the end of the day, everyone will benefit, right? And if you can get them aligned appropriately, even if it's outside of your organization, I'm a true believer that there's still fruit there, and that that fruit comes full circle. And it's been crazy now, and you can tell me when to stop talking because I'm going to ramble on. I've been doing this for
No,
24.
you're good. That'll be a decent segue more because we kind of need to rewind a little bit.
Okay, let's
So
go.
here's where Kenny Pointer's at now. What was your first dream, man? So let's go back to kind of high school, early college, because I feel like, at least for me, that's the apex period. And I ask the same problem. I'm perpetuating the problem. I put that in quotations, where I think it's just a natural question. Hey, what are you going to college for? What do you want to be when you grow up? What's going through Kenny's head at that time?
It's interesting. I'm gonna say this, when people ask me today, what do you, what'd you want to be when you grow up? I said, I I'm still figuring it out, right? So I wasn't in it. I wasn't a person that had a plan as far as like, okay, I'm gonna go to business school, and
Sure.
I want to end up being a chief of a corporation or an organization or whatever else. I would say in high school, I'm a big sports guy, right? I love sports. I was big into baseball. I would like to think that I was pretty good. You know, I had some offers on the table and all those things. And you know, coming from a family, especially a blue collar family, we sat down and it made sense for you to go to school, and get going. So, you know, my mother is Korean. She's from South Korea. That's where she's from and born and raised. So I don't know if you know about the culture, right? But education's important, right? And it's like,
Right.
go to school, start working, start earning money and all those things. So, you know, I decided, all right, I'm gonna go to school. The way I chose school, I'll be honest with you, my brother came to Kansas City and I saw what he was doing and I visited and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go to Kansas City, and I end up going to DeVry. And you know, all you know, reach for the sky. I remember all the commercials and, you know, DeVry
Yeah.
and all those things and whatever else. And I decided to pursue that. And my senior year of high school, I was taking an accounting class, and I was good at it. So I just decided I'm gonna go on to college. Accounting is the only thing in school that I actually kind of like. So I pursued
Yeah.
an accounting degree. And but not, again, not to be an accountant, not because I knew what I wanted to be, but because I just knew like I was good at this and I know I want to go to school. So I ended up going there for I got an accounting information systems degree. So I could sit for my CPA, and I could build accounting software. And at the end of the day, when I graduated, I didn't want to do either. So I was just like, huh, well, I'm gonna start working because that's what I know. That's how I was raised. That's the direction that, you know, I was given, and just I'm gonna start working. So it doesn't matter. I went through school, I checked that box, I got a degree, I checked that box. Now it's time to work. So I ended up going to State Street. And back then in the early 2000s, State Street was hiring all sorts of people out of college and probably had some of the better pay rates and all these different things. And you know, and so I started working at State Street. But what didn't change is I continued to
And
play
are you
baseball.
in Kansas City in this period then? Is this Kansas City?
I
And
was in
then
the
we've
Kansas
talked
City.
about, I did a little work there too, I think maybe. Anyway, keep
I
going. Sorry.
No, you're
Shout out
good.
State
I
Street.
came to
It
Kansas City in 1998, and I've been
hurts.
here ever since. So as a military kid, Kansas City is my home. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love it here. But nothing ever changed in terms of sports. I still, even to this day, I've got no knees, but I still play softball. I still play basketball. I'm just a sports guy. I just love doing it. And even coming up, going to college, I played a lot of, still played competitive sports in different leagues in Kansas City. And even it's so funny, I tell people a story. Budweiser had a flag football league. I don't know if people realize this. Back in like 1999, it was the first professional flag football league. I played in it.
Ah.
Yeah, it was interesting. We weren't very good, but it was fun to at least say, you know, hey, we played in the Budweiser Flag Football League. But anyway, you know, went to
Yeah.
school and graduated and just started. And I'll be honest with you, when you asked me like what was my dreams, I just started working. And I said, I'll tell you, my only dream was when I started working, I did tell myself that if I can get to a certain income level, my dreams are, then I can satisfy whatever dreams I have, right? And I was just thinking about
Sure.
the income level. I'm not going to say it just, but it wasn't very much, to be honest with you. And it was barely, I don't even think it wasn't even six figures. It was just getting towards a six figure number,
Yeah.
which this day and age is, I mean, it's not very much, but that was my goal. That was my
Yeah.
dream,
Yeah.
and just to live a normal, healthy life. To be honest with you, I know that sounds crazy, but that's just I was just driven,
No. I
motivated to
completely
work.
understand. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. That's wow. Okay, so then you're at State Street, so you're just kind of you're in it, you're going with the you're working towards that income level. What shifted from there? What brought you to the next thing? Why not State Street forever?
I started learning. Like I started I that when I started working, for me personally, is when things started to become more clear, right? I could have stayed at State Street, even when I left within a year, they were offering me a team lead position, like a supervisor position. And for some reason, it just didn't feel right. Right. And, you know, I'll say this throughout, right? I'm not going to preach, but my whole story, I mean, if you can't see that God is real in my story, I don't know what to tell you, because that's the only way I can explain it. And the wisdom that he's given me through this is just, as I look back, is just, it's crazy to think about. But as we think about that, I'm a risk taker. So I didn't know at the time, but I had this risk taker side to me. So at State Street, I was one of two people, I think, that, I don't know if you remember this, but they had a custody system and the accounting system, and they were bringing them together. It's called
Okay.
MCH, and I forgot, it wasn't PAS, it was something else. And they're like, who wants to try to work in this environment and test it for us or whatever? No one wanted to. And I was like, I'll do it. And that's the first time I realized, when I started doing that, like, I like this. I like building.
Yeah.
I like seeing things. And then I started realizing I'm good at this, right? So then when I left there, it was more of just a gut feeling of it. I'm not sure this was for me. Then I went to a marketing firm, because I went, the vibes were cool. I was young, you know, I'm 20 years old, 22 years
Yeah.
old. And I'm like, cool, I'm gonna do this. And it ended up being a door-to-door sales job. So
Okay. All right. Exciting.
quit
Fantastic.
that.
And what did you do at State Street, to be clear, too? Because I don't.
I was a fund accountant.
Okay.
Entry
Fund
level,
accountant. Gotcha.
entry level fund accountant. And again, accounting degree, fund accountant sounded good. So I was like, sure, sounds like that might be something that, you know, I've been educated for or whatever else.
Sure,
But
sure, sure, sure.
it's also where I started
Pass the
realizing,
sniff test.
yeah, sniffed it, exactly. But I'll start realizing, like, I like solving problems. That's when it started
Yes.
kicking off for me, and I kind of told myself, like, I'm going to be that person that anytime there's a project or a challenge, they need someone to do something like that, I'm going to do it, because I have fun doing it, and I like solving problems. So that's, if you look at my entire career, if I took you through this entire journey, that's been my persona. I step
How were
into
you at door-to-door sales? Did that take
horrible.
away the problem solving? Okay, horrible. Okay, wow.
Horrible. I did it for literally a few days, and it was, I quit. I never really
Sure.
quit anything in my life, and I quit, and I went right back into this industry, the financial services industry, and ended
Sure.
up at DST, which I think a lot of
Okay.
people in Kansas City worked at DST at one point. And then, so I've been in the financial services industry. I had a little blip of about 3 months with the marketing deal, but I've been in the financial services industry since 2000.
Gotcha. Okay. Exciting. So you're at DST. Tell me about, so you're learning now that you like problem solving problems. So you're definitely more services side of the shop in general over sales, I feel like, because although both
100%.
solve problems, they're very different problems.
Correct.
And then so what has you transitioned from DST?
So DST was a great learning opportunity. I got to see a different side of the industry as well. So it's kind of the if you look at the 360 view of the industry, the fund accounting custodial piece on the fund management side was here, and DST on the transfer agency side was kind of the other component to that circle. So being able to see that life cycle was interesting. And then ultimately, the last thing I did at DST, was they had onboarded the PIMCO funds, which is large mutual fund organization, in the early 2000s. And I helped on that project. Again, another just huge challenge. Like, who wants to try to do this or whatever? So I stepped into that. But once that started to wind down, I started realizing again, like, the environment, the corporate America, big box organizations, the structure, it just didn't fit me well. Like, I didn't see the next challenge ahead of me, because it was like, all right, we're winding this down. Now you're going to go back to, you know, at that point, I did full service, phone calls, paperwork, all those things. And I'm just like, I need something else. Like, and I wasn't looking, but a headhunter reached out and said, hey, just saw your, you know, what you do, everything else. Like, you want to talk about an opportunity? And that's when he introduced me to Eintelligent Consulting. So Jim Starcif, Mark Calhoun. Jim was on your podcast. I think
Was, yeah.
that's how we got connected. And they introduced me to them. And you got to realize at DST, I had a had a steady paycheck, had great benefits. I knew what was going to happen every day. Like I knew I was going to be taken care of. I knew I could pay my bills. I could plan it out, whatever else.
Did you have a family at this point?
I was starting a family at that point, I would say.
Okay.
So in my first marriage was starting to come together at that point. And then when I went to Intelligent, when I made that move, that's when I started to build my family from that perspective.
When I'm more asking from the perspective of, so you to add context to it, you're stable, great benefits.
Correct.
I just kind of ask because a lot of people it's that I talk to that are risk adverse use their family as an excuse sometimes. And so I'm just trying to get in with that context.
At the time of making the decision to move to Intelligent, I would say I did have dependents, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I got married during my Intelligent time, but when I
Yeah.
made the decision, it wasn't just myself. So,
Right. Okay.
and it was
What are you leaping to? What's intelligent from the perspective of, stability and
it from
time
that
and pay
perspective,
and
if you were to look at what I was doing, most people would say this is a bad decision. It was a monthly paycheck versus every other week. There was no benefits.
what is a monthly paycheck? How do you pull that off? I'm kind of every time you bring that up, I'm like, can you pull that off in 2024? I mean, a monthly paycheck could be helpful.
It was hard. I'm not gonna lie. Like you think you can, that's a long time, right? You're sitting there and you
This is a
think you
long time. Was it salary style on those week on those months with 5 weeks?
Yeah,
Was it the same paycheck
I
or
believe
was it augmented?
everyone was salary. So I believe
Okay,
when I
gotcha.
started, so it was the same paycheck every month. And it was scary, but for some reason again, I was like, this feels like the right opportunity for me. I was employee number, I think, five with
Okay.
Intelligent. So it was ground level. Like there's a few people, those guys that just started the
Yeah,
organization.
that's as startup as it gets. Five.
And we got there and I loved it because the whole thing was a challenge. The whole thing was a puzzle piece. Like so this whole taking on these challenges small, within an organization. Now I was in this seat where I'm like, oh, like every day we're building something new. We're trying to figure out how to get this to work, or from technology to operations. I'd have to go some mornings and restart the servers in the closet. Just all those things. I would say Intelligent for my career is where I would say that's where my career started. Like truly, like who you see now is a result of being at that organization. And the ability for me to do what I did there and how much I was able to learn is. And how much of that is still relevant 20 years later is crazy to think about. I mean, when people ask me what was a turning point or when did it really, it was at that organization for sure.
When you talked about getting to know how the sausage is made, I feel like there's no better opportunity for that than a startup. I don't know. If I'm being honest, I think there's really two things that people younger in their life to try and jump into. And customer service style food service is great, something like that, right? And the other one, I feel like it'd have to be some sort of startup because you just get a lot more of a raw experience, in my opinion, that I'm sure probably exists still higher up in a larger organization. But when you are ground level State Street, right? I just do what I'm supposed to do yesterday, what I was supposed to do tomorrow. Oh, the rules changed. Okay, well, it's, my opinion or values don't necessarily matter. These are the new rules. So this is what I'm going to do today. That I didn't do yesterday, but I will do tomorrow and next year.
And for someone like me, the way I am, and like it's crazy that I'm doing this podcast because I'm not a public speaker, but I've gotten much better at it. I was a person that even through school, head down, work hard, I didn't raise my hand much. I never really said a lot or whatever. And even in the workplace, through Stage Street at DST, head down, I rose my hand to take on a challenge, but I didn't really question anyone. I just, whatever. And at Intelligent was the first breakthrough I had, where I'm like, I remember either asking a question or saying something, and everyone was just like, that's a great idea. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I think I have more. Like, because I was at a startup, you can't just sit there and just press buttons. I mean, you have to be a part of it. You have to talk, you have to put it out there. And that's when I started realizing that I had a voice, and my voice was actually valuable. Because for me, I'm like, someone else has already thought about it. Someone else is already thinking it. I had a lot of assumptions that people are smarter than me. They already thought about it. There's no point of bringing it up. I'm sure it's part of their plan. And then when I started trickling some stuff out there, it's like, oh, no, we didn't even think about that. It's great. And I started realizing, like, oh, okay, I might have something here. Maybe I'll start speaking up more. And I would say by the end of the Intelligent, they couldn't get me to shut up. So even now, by the way. Yeah. So.
That's good. Yeah. That's cool. That's really interesting. I remember a scenario at State Street where that whole they couldn't get me to shut up thing. I think I've just kind of always been in that a little bit. And so, as you can imagine, corporate was just killer on me. I still remember a conversation where my manager, and my manager was your ideal sort of like lead first, sweetheart of a guy. Hey, I'm going to do this very difficult thing if you guys had time and wanted to help. And he'd hired people, me and my cohort, we were always the first to like, let's go. Are you kidding me? You're not going to tackle anything on your own. We're right there with you. But one day he goes, he's like, Sam, do you think we're capable of fixing these problems? I was like, no, I guess not. He's like, do you think I am? I was like, no, I guess not. He's like, okay, so maybe just tune it down a little bit. And it worked. I mean, he was 100% right. It was that moment of realization of, oh, I don't have an opinion here. And it's not because it just it doesn't do anybody any good to voice it. So anyway, that's cool though that you enter an environment that coaxes that out of you.
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. I mean, I know this sounds corny or cheesy. Like, making the decision to go to that company changed my life, right? Because it wasn't just the startup. I mean, if you know the guys that own that company, just great human beings. I mean, I also started to see that in practice within an organization up close of what it meant to be a good human being, but yet still be successful at business. And the two can go together. 'Cause growing up the way that, we've grown up, I mean, big business and business people, there's a persona there, right? They're a different type of breed, right? They're a different type of whatever. And at Intelligent, it showed me, like, these two guys can do this. I mean, they're just normal human, good guys, just good human beings. They treated people well. We had great conversations. I'm like, okay, these are just normal people. There's not any, they're special, yes, but there's no special sauce of, like, they have different DNA to be successful. They're just
They didn't come out of a Terminator vat or something like that.
correct, which is what I thought. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but this is why I like talking to people that are more like me and, everything else, because I think that's still some sort of persona there of, again, the way you have to look. They're different. Like, I can't be that because they have a different secret sauce than I have. And really, at the end of the day, I got to see it firsthand. They convinced me that, okay, I can do this if I stay grounded in the things that I told you about. Can I go back to State Street real quick? One thing I say I learned from State Street to this day, the one thing I learned, State Street's a great company, whatever. The one thing I learned that I still do today, that I learned at 20 years old, the unit manager, or whatever they called them, the not my manager, not the senior, but the one above that. Every He's an important guy in my group. Every morning, he came by and shook everyone's hand and recognized every single person, even if it was just to say hi, every morning. And when I was a young person, I thought to myself, That is, and he was corny, super corny. I was like, I don't know why he does this. Like, you know what I'm saying? And what I
Yeah.
noticed every morning, he would stop and talk to people a little longer, right? But then I realized over a course of a couple of weeks, he's actually had a conversation with every single person. Because every morning he would stop and just talk to someone for a couple minutes versus others, he'd just say hi. But by the time he came around, at some point he talked to you, like actually had a conversation. He left. And the void that that left in that team, the void it left in me of at, the guy that was like, this is corny, this is stupid, he should stop doing this. When he stopped that, the morale of that team dropped significantly to where I was like, I see what he was doing.
Yeah.
And to this day, you can ask my teams now. I fist bump everybody. I don't care who you are. I make sure I try my best to at least acknowledge people's existence, right? Even if it's a 2 second, how you doing? Good to see you today. Or sometimes it's a 2 minute conversation. And I'll tell you, if you go talk to my team, that's probably one of the first things you'll hear is, oh, Kenny, yeah, watch out for those fist bumps because he's going to come find you no matter what or whatever else. Because I think it's important to me of, you know, and I do that at a chief level of an organization that's now thousands of employees deep and one of the largest in the end. I can still do that. And it's impactful to do that. And that's one thing I learned from State Street. I always say, like, I did learn things through some of the big box organizations. And that's one of my biggest ones from State Street. So.
One I still like, I think there's something hugely impactful to that, and it goes back to the whole being genuine and willing to help people thing. I still remember, I don't remember exactly the context, which is so bad because I reference it semi-regularly. This big boardroom table kind of a thing, and we're having a meeting, and I'm the lowest guy at the table, and the chief next week shakes my hand and remembers my name. Mind you, at the time, I'm particularly bad at recalling anybody's name. When I started in business, I told myself that I was not capable of forgetting people's names because that guy could remember my name, and I wanted to be that guy. What's also interesting too, and I think part of the point of the podcast is you're right that when I was younger, I had the notion, and it was impressed upon me that it's like, okay, if you want to do this thing, you have to get a college degree, and you have to da da da, and you have to this, that, and the other. And so, you know, I'm sure there's people out there thinking it's like, okay, if I want to be Kenny, I have to have a PhD in accounting, and I have to, and I have to, and I have to. But it's interesting because what I know to be true, what you know to be true is it doesn't have to be that way. I'm not saying that isn't somebody else's path. Maybe they pull it off that way, but turns out just being a decent person and going about being the best version of yourself and trying to help other people can be,
And always learn. If you ever feel like you got it figured out, you don't. Like,
That's the worst thing.
always learning. That's the big thing. And understand that everyone is different, right? There's some people that intellectually
Yeah.
are so much more superior than me, and just their knowledge of
Yeah.
content and concepts and all those things. Where I would say my special sauce is in practicality of applying concepts, which is why I work well with people that are really, really, really smart, because I can challenge them in ways of, okay, now let's transform that into something real. Let's transform the book you just read, or the degree you just got into something real, and that's one of the things that I see a lot of people struggle with coming out of some of the higher education is it's great, but then it's like, how do I now actually do this? And it's, well, I got to follow the instructions. And I always tell people education and knowledge to me is the root of wisdom, right? You
Yeah.
can be highly educated, you can be highly knowledgeable, but you may have no wisdom, if that makes sense. You can't discern the ability to, now, how do I apply that in a way to make good decisions that benefit the organization, my people, or whatever else. And I think the misconception sometimes is the more knowledge and the more information and knowledge I acquire, the better suited I'm going to be successful. If you can't translate that into wisdom from my perspective, it's just in life in general. Like you've got a problem. And for me, it's so interesting when you think about that life cycle. I think my purpose is I sit right there after the knowledge piece, and I'm the guy that's like, okay, now let's apply this. Let's how do you make good decisions now? And taking the information you've learned, how do you apply this in a way now that can position you to be successful at completing a project or influencing others in the organization? Because guess what? You know this. You can't go into a room full of people and just say and hit them with a book and say, I'm going to follow all the steps in this, so you better now come along with me as a leader. No. You've got to be able to take the concepts and the philosophies and the knowledge, package it in a way, in your way, to then figure out how to be effective in whatever the situation is that you're in. And I know we might get to this, but that's why I've been so like talking about this IC Stars thing that we that's been done now in Kansas City for the last year and a half or so, because that program is not just education. For the cohort, it's also now practicality of how do you now work in a business environment? How do you now interact in a business environment? How do you apply these things? These are just components to do a job. Now, how do we make this in a way for you to have the ability to be successful in an actual practical work environment, right? Which is a great thing, because I think even in higher education, that's lacking.
And it's funny. I'm sorry. I've got an analogy now, a little race
Yes.
car game analogy. But I think your ability to integrate the information you've learned is more valuable. If you had to pick, both are great. But if you had to pick, is more valuable than just amassing information, right? And the race car analogy that came to my mind is acceleration versus top speed. You
Yep.
can beat a race with a bunch of turns, which life has a lot of, if you have a faster acceleration than a top speed.
100%. I would agree with that. And here's what's interesting is I can do that really, really well in the business world. In my personal life, I lean on my wife. She's just like in my personal life, she's one of the wisest people I
Yeah.
know. And it's so crazy how like I've had to compartmentalize. Like I can do it really good over here, but in my personal life, I lean on her a lot because I'm like she's so good at it. Being able to do the same thing, but just in a different context, in a different setting, it's interesting, right? And it's also understanding where you fit. Like a lot of people try to be everything, and they try to be the expert at everything, and try to have all the knowledge of everything, and they never know where they actually fit into what I call the value chain of life. Like I think for me, over time, I've realized where I fit, and I'm okay with that. Like I'm okay. I'm not going to be the sales head of sales. I'm not. I realize where I fit, and I think when you understand that, there's so much reward with that. I mean, and it's a good thing, right? You can't be the best at everything, right? What they say, jack of all trades, master of none. Is that the quote? I think something like that, or
No,
whatever.
you
But
nailed it. Well, then if you finish it, that says is better than a master of one or something like that. But
something like that. You know, it's just it's an interesting concept. Business world. I give this analogy to so many people. 2 seconds. Went to a big meeting, all the top 20 firms. There's a guy there. He MIT graduate or Harvard graduate, 2 MIT graduate degrees, head of analytics and data. And he says, you know, which firm is ready to talk about what they could do with advanced analytics, predictive analytics, et cetera, and machine learning, AI, whatever. This was probably 3 years ago. So him and I end up talking for 30 minutes afterwards. And he looked at me. You got to realize, like, I used to be kind of ashamed a little bit that I went to DeVry when I started getting into corporate America. Now I'm just like, yeah, I don't care. I went to DeVry. Yeah, I went to an institute of technology. It's fine.
So shout out to DeVry. Unless other institutes do this, they brought me in to do mock interviews, like actually interview people. I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Yes.
And he goes, "Oh, you think that's cool? That's nothing. I have them get up and present their resume before the
Yep.
entire class, before they've even started." And
Yep.
I don't have a lot of academy, college experience.
Yep.
But that was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen, because it was like, wow, you're actually, they're going to be able to, this is going to, they're, these guys are going to have a good resume. They're actually employable after this.
Yep.
So anyway, sorry,
So,
but keep
on the
going. You used
situation,
to be ashamed. Yeah.
you got Harvard, MIT, all. You look at this guy's, I mean, this guy was impressive
Sure.
in terms of his education. We talked about
Yeah.
for about 30 minutes. He's like, I gotta tell you something. I've learned more from you in this last 30 minutes than I have in the last year of building this team out. He said, because I got so all these smart people. He's like, but I can't get the group to like actually move forward and implement. So what we did was we partnered with them. We're the only firm that partnered with them, and my team was scared. They were all like, these guys are all like Ivy League analysts and all this stuff. And we got
Yeah.
in. It was great because the team realized, like, again, at the end of the day, we're all humans with different. We brought a different dynamic to the table than they did, but together we did some pretty cool stuff. And we realized that we actually had more intellectual property than they did, and ability to go down this road than they did, more from a positioning and whatever perspective. And that's just a cool story. Like, don't be intimidated. I always tell people, don't be intimidated. Like, everyone has different experience. I can tell you, I probably have more scars in this industry than most people that I talk to. And scars being just, again, I step into all these challenges. I've done a lot of these things. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot from that perspective. And you only get scars if you learn from the situations, not just,
Yeah.
again, going through
What
it and
other
not.
people might call mistakes.
Correct.
Learning material.
100%. I mean, that's life, isn't it? And that's just,
Oh, 100%.
man,
And
we'll talk
100%.
about
And
life. That's a whole nother 2 hours.
it's and if you start a business, it seems like the learning mistakes only become more and more financially costly. You yeah, anyway, I don't know. You make like a $100 mistake, and then next thing you know, it's anyway, I
Yep.
don't know.
Yeah,
But
I hear you.
so let's kind of catch up so we can get to IC Stars. You went from Intelligent to, well, I mean, I feel like we can kind of fast track this. It's basically a shortcut, Intelligent to Mariner, basically. But can you kind of go through that transition relatively quick?
Yeah, I went from Intelligent to a large IBD in Kansas City at the time, and I was there for about 6 years. And I do want to bring that up
Okay,
because
that's fair.
I ran operations and things. But what I ended up doing there, and again, as I think about my journey, I took on a large digital transformational project for that organization. I started as a key stakeholder participant, and within a year, I was essentially heading it up because of all sorts of I learned a lot of things through that. We rolled out all new technology across the organization to like 5,000 plus users through that journey. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot about corporate politics. I learned a lot about projects, technical implementation at scale. I've done it in the past, but at scale and all those things from that perspective. I was in a good position there. And I want to highlight this because before I went to Mariner, I was offered some pretty lucrative roles to stay. Throughout my journey, I tell people this, and I told you this, every job that I took, I essentially took less money. Every transition, DST to Intelligent, I took a pay cut. Intelligent to this firm, this IBD, I took a pay cut. From the IBD to Mariner, based on whether I took a pay cut. And I even left equity on the table at the two prior firms. And people were like, you're crazy. Like, you are crazy. And
And
I
that's
told
so
people,
hard to convince some people to do sometimes. I've had people that don't have career options, and I'm like, just get into tech. Like I've got the whole blueprint. Just follow along what I did, and they're like, oh, I can't take a pay cut. And it's like, man, it's just we're talking a couple dollars. Would you rather go to university?
But I
Anyway,
can
keep
tell
going.
you in my journey, none of that's a factor. It all always worked itself out.
Yeah.
And even more so, to be honest with you. Like, and I always tell people, like, if you're good at what you do and you stay rooted and you can produce and do, I mean, it'll work out, right? At the end of the day, it'll work. And if you make good decisions, be a good human being, it will work out, right? So fast track to Mariner in the transition. Mariner's been fun. I mean, it was kind of when I came in, it was there's some people before me that did a lot of great work. I mean, they set some great foundational things, but it was on that cusp, right? Of like, okay, we're a large RIA at the time. And if you can see back in like 2018-ish is when you started to see this industry really start ramping up, right? In terms of more firms aggregating other firms, the M&A space kind of blew up, the growth in this space and the amount of assets being transferred into this space just continued to balloon. So when they brought me in, it was like the vision of the CEO, Marty, he was like, okay, I know we got to do something because I'm about to grow this thing, right? And I know the back office operational components was a little bit of a blind spot for them, right? That's why they brought me in. And so when they brought me in, it was crazy. It was a great mix of all of the experiences I've had, right? So when I came and there's large scale potential technical projects or implementation of systems. There's the small company vibe still, right? There's still some of the things where I was like, okay, I dealt with this at Intelligent, and there was some of the larger organization components that I just came from in terms of dynamics ahead. So it was a cool mix of like, man, like for me, it was like I can bring all my experiences together, and where they are right now, man, I can add some value here. Like, and I can do this. And at the end of the day, the scariest part about making any move for me is, am I going to progress as far as learning, knowledge, and ability? But are they going to value me, like who I am? And I would say, my journey at Mariner is at the end of the day, they've let me be who I am. Like when I show up and I crack jokes, I have analogies like you, and that's how I knew it was the right fit because I could be me, and bring a lot of experiences. But more importantly, in the last 6 years, I've continued to, man, I've still continued to learn so much more, and I continue to, and I think that journey has been great for me, and kind of how it's all rolled up, and when you have that, is this where I'm supposed to be? Like, why am I here? Like, how did, same thing though. They reached out to me through a referral. Like, I wasn't looking. Same thing. I've never looked for a job. Every A headhunter got a hold of me, or a recruiter got a hold of me. Tell me that's not divine intervention. Every
Yeah, I
job.
was gonna say that seems like a little bit of a God thing for sure. And we didn't get into it either, but Jim Starcev at Intelligent was a believer.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's an interesting way of how he found his partner and how I think a big part of how that worked.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. So tell me about what's some of the work you're doing with IC Stars, because we haven't really got into that yet. What
Yeah.
is that? What are you doing with that?
Well, so I'm on the board. Be quite honest with you, I would love to be doing a lot more. So kind of my role in the ICA Stars piece was just kind of being a connector, to help, get some of the funding to get it off the ground. And now being on the board is just continuing to help, move it forward. And it's a great experience for me. This is the first nonprofit organization that I've been a part of, right? I've always had a passion for it. My wife and I talk about all the time. We love to help people in general, just how we live our life, right? But I've never been tied to a nonprofit. So this is the first time I stepped into this world. I had a little bit of my own thoughts about it or whatever else. But I mean, it was kind of, again, another divine intervention. I know it sounds kind of cliche or whatever the word is, but I bought some gym equipment. I think I told you this story. It's crazy. I bought some gym equipment from 68 Sports, right? I'm not trying to name drop, but Will Shields, who played for the Chiefs, all that good stuff, Hall of Famer, whatever. We bought some equipment from him. He closed down his facility, so we bought. We do like this garage thing at our house where we have family come over, kids. We do weight training, different things like that. I was like, okay. So I bought a lot of equipment for very cheap, right? We go to pick it up. Will Shields helps us load my truck, me and my little one, my 11-year-old, 10-year-old. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I've seen him at the little facility and things, and he helps us load the truck, and we just start talking. And I was like, hey, what's next for you? He's like, I don't know. I'm probably gonna just focus more on, my community efforts because he's been big into that or whatever. And I was like, oh, that sounds great, and whatnot. And we talked for probably 30 minutes, just talking, not about work, but just talking. And then we're like, we should get some coffee. And he told me, he's like, yeah, we'll get some coffee. So after that, we met up another time or so, and then we after the human component, just cool dude. We're talking whatever. Then it's like you start talking about the icy star. He's like, what do you do? You gotta realize from getting the equipment for the first time we've actually started talking everything, that never came up. It was just getting to know each other as people, and we just seemed to be we had good conversation. And then he's like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I work at Mariner or whatever. He's like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, sir, I don't ever tell people my title. I'm like, I do operation service technology stuff. He's like, oh man, I love fintech, and I love it. So we start talking. And then he talks about fintech, and then he talks about IC stars, and that's his next. That's what he's been focused on, or whatever. And let's just say, 3 meetings later or so, I consider him a mentor now. He's helped coach me in a lot of ways. I mean, when you talk about imposter syndrome and where do we fit in, and navigating business and just all those things, that guy has been super helpful for me as a mentor, right? I've called him a few times, just like, hey man, you got some insights with this or whatever else. But ultimately, Mariner ended up being, I believe, the first organization to make a substantial funding effort for IC Stars to come to Kansas City. So I was through that relationship, all that coming to be, I was able to sit down with the ownership of Mariner, and we wrote that check for IC Stars to start building in Kansas City. And that was a crazy moment for me, because again, I've never that's probably the closest I've tied personal passion to work, because I've always been nervous about that, and I've always been like, business people type thing, just me, right? More of me on my side. But through this meeting Will, having the great organization I work for, and I'm not just saying that because I still work there, but great human people at the end of the day, bringing those two things together gave that opportunity to happen, and it's awesome. And the big thing about that organization for me is, so I went to DeVry, right? I don't know if people know this. You get your degree, or used to, I don't know about now, in 2 years and 8 months. You go trimesters for 2 years and you get your bachelor's. This program is like a boot camp. You go for 14 weeks, it was 16, 10 hours a day, and you get certain certifications. It's a hardcore, and you're there. But for me personally, I will tell you, I needed that. I needed that discipline in my life at that time, and I needed that, like, to stay that commit and to get through it. And I learned so much about myself getting through school because of just that, right? And now these people are going through something similar for me. That's what connected with me, of like, you're getting people from certain parts of the community that maybe didn't have that opportunity or whatever. If they can get through this and the commitment and the time of it, their success, their ability to be successful is going to go through the roof. Because you're talking about scars, 10 hours a day for 14 weeks. You have probably kids, you probably have other things you do, and get like, and to do that.
What is this? What is IC Stars? Because it's for the sake of the audience, is it a university? You mentioned you just compared it in with DeVry, but it sounds like not quite
No, it's
certifications,
not a
like a tech
university.
school.
It's more like a I would consider it more like a tech school, but it's technical training. So for the 14 weeks, they learn, they take on a project. So they do like an RFP with a sponsoring organization, and that organization comes in and they provide their resources as far as leadership, and they do an RFP, and they end up actually building an asset. If it's okay, we want to build a new app, or we want to build a new process within our organization, they actually, I would say, for lack of a better word, outsource that to the cohort, and that becomes their project for that cohort. But they do presentations, they work with that company directly, they get trained on how to do coding, they get trained on project management, on VA type work, they get trained on all those things, all those components. They have teams, and then they get into teams as well, so they learn how to work as a team. But at the end of it, they're producing a and some sort of an asset or something for something real for an organization. And it's all, like I said, technical training, and then there's opportunities to potentially do certifications. And then the cool part about it too is there it's a they do a stipend program to where they you get I forgot the amount. I want to say, just don't quote me here, but up to $200 or so or whatever a week to participate in the program. So they're not paying for this. IC Stars is actually paying for them to be in the program because, again, 10 hours a day, 14 weeks, like they need income. They need the ability to
Need
still
something, yeah.
something from that perspective. Then it's also a placement program. So a lot of times, people from the cohort get placed in the organization they did the RFP for, but then you can also like do contract to hire and those types of things if there isn't a full-time opportunity, et cetera. So it's a pretty cool organization. The part that I really like, my favorite part about it, and the part that probably sold me the most is they said they go through 300 plus simulations or like real life work scenarios. So it's not just the technical training is a big component, but it's like, what happens if your coworker takes credit for your work on a team project? What happens when your boss shows up a certain way, or you get criticized, or you're sick, or you have family issues, or all the intangible things that people just don't know, especially if you're not from that world. Business perspective, it prepares them to be able to fit into there. But I will say that one of the things that they've been talking about is doing more. Shamika Hogan is the director. She's awesome. And she's talking about doing like a man in the mirror type exercise of because there's still a little bit of a gap of like, can I really do this? Right? Because they're going into a space where a lot of them don't necessarily fit in terms of their journey and their background. And so putting some more focus on that as well. But what I like about it is then there's an alumni component. They continue to support them afterwards. And it's just a full life cycle journey for these people, which I think is awesome. And the tech industry needs this. If you think about where you want to get educated and where you want to get into, and if you think about the underserved communities, technology is one of those things that we shy away from, where no, let's get more diversity into these worlds, and that's how you change communities, right? At the end of the day.
100%. Yeah. Well, and I so technology is a beautiful one that I think is discounted. So many people are like, "Oh, I need this big degree to get into technology." But in my experience, the very reality with the pace at which technology works. So, part of my story involves Cerner and an early internship where Cerner basically said the curriculum is 3 years behind when you graduate. So, we're recruiting out of college so that way we can give you some degree of decent experience so that way you're actually worth and then we can hire you directly. So, all that to say, people think they need this big complex degree, but the reality is it's tech is kind of like a I mean I don't know how else to explain it. Almost like I guess a white collar technical trade in that, a couple certifications and away you go, if that. And so it, yeah. And we need people that have ground level experience on what the tech actually looks like when applied. Because frankly, the book and reality are sometimes two very, very different things.
Oh man, it's yes. That it's so hard for people to understand that sometimes, right? It's like I'm doing everything the book told me to do. I'm doing everything that the successful motivational speaker told me to do, and it's not working for me. And it's again, it's we're all unique, right? I love my wife says this all the time, and it's a quote that I think she got from someone else, but it's be yourself, everyone else is taken. So if that's the case, like these blueprints are blueprints of other people's fingerprints. And it's great because it's great knowledge, it's great information, but you have to create your own blueprint, right? And your own blueprint is going to be completely different and unique from any other blueprint that's been written because we're all different. We're all different in our styles. We're all different in our brains. There's not one person on this earth that's exactly the same, right? And from that perspective, when you're reading and you're gathering all this knowledge, that's what I'm saying is information and knowledge is great. The wisdom component comes in when you learn to create your own blueprint using that information and knowledge, right? And if you're trying to use someone else's blueprint holistically to create your own success path, that's where a lot of people fail. And you see it and you're just like, ah, make it your own. And then make it your own doesn't mean take it and then like you're saying it so it's your own. No, make it your own. Now, how does that add into your blueprint? It's a component of your puzzle that you're trying to solve. And if you can get into that mindset, I think people become very successful. That's why it's going to be interesting, right? In this next generation. I mean, we are in an age of more information than ever before, accessibility to information than ever before, right? Which is a great thing. But my thing is, if you can't take that information, understand it, and apply it to your blueprint, we're going to have a lot of people just wandering aimlessly in this world of information and knowledge and confused as to why they're not doing the same as the person that has the same access to the information and knowledge. It's because you have to now take it to that next level. And that's just how that's what I tell everyone from that perspective is that that's the full life cycle at the end of the day.
So we're getting close to wrap up here. There's a couple questions I like to ask kind of towards the end, started to refine it over the podcast episodes. We have a motto over here, and it is, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants, which in its true form was derived by Isaac Newton's, if I have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Anyway, there's a whole history behind the motto. But who's been a giant in your life that's allowed you to see further?
Oh man. Well, I mean, the biggest giant in my life, and again, and I won't preach to y'all, but the biggest giant in my life is and I'll just my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, man, and God himself, right? If you really think about it, I mean, what other shoulder to stand on to see the things in front of you at the end of the
What
day?
better mentor?
What better mentor, right? What there is no better book out there, right, to be honest with you. And I would say that's number one, right? And people say that, but it's the truth. And if you look at my journey, I mean, if you look at this interview, I didn't go through a map of like, oh, here I made this decision. Half the decisions I made in my I don't even remember. I just thank God and say like, thank you for creating that path. Thank you for giving me the wisdom at the time to make certain decisions at the end of the day, which has been great. I would also say, my parents have been a big component of my life in terms of they're blue collar people, right? My dad's from Mississippi. From the Delta of Mississippi, my mom's from Seoul, South Korea. Neither one of them grew up in a privileged life at all. I mean, I'd say my mom dealt with homelessness. My dad and they lived. All I gotta say is they lived in the Delta of Mississippi in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Like that, and before that, you can tie together if you know anything about the South, you can tie together how they lived. Right? Let's just a dollar a week, work the land, all those things. But their work ethic and being grounded in like being a good person at the end of the day and a good human, that's where I got it from, to be honest with you. Like to see how hard they've worked with a purpose, but yet still be good human beings and the way they treat people. I mean, they're 70 years old now, about to be 70, and then, so if you see them, they look like they're 50, and they're always like, "We're gonna go help the old people this week." I'm like, "You guys are the old people." Like I'm confused. Like, no, we're gonna go help the help the elderly, and I'm like, I think you guys are knocking on that door. So it's just who they are. It's been cool to see, like how grounded they are in my life, and how I look back and see, like, yeah, like their work and their what they drove in us, me and my brother both. I think has continued to help us be successful. And then I think, my family, of course. Like I sound like I'm giving a Oscar speech or something like that, but I would say my family, they help keep me grounded quite a bit. Like we don't live the way most people probably live in my capacity or in my profession and how we do things. we keep each other grounded from that perspective, and it's great, especially my wife. It's insane that, you know, we just talk to each other all the time, that we're on this journey together, and that we get to see the fruition of what's happening. And at the end of the day too, we also know, like, you know, we're enjoying the moments, but God can change the plan anytime, right? He can say it's time for you now to go back to some suffering in certain ways or whatever else, and we understand that, and and that's part of the journey. So we don't take anything for granted either. Like, we are extremely grateful for everything that we have, and that gratitude gives us the ability to help others. I mean, and that's our recipe for life in general. And you know, the biggest thing for me with all of that foundational component, here's what I always tell people. When you say it's hard to make the leap in terms of, I can't walk away from this compensation. I'm stuck at this job because I've now embedded this job so deeply in my life. I can't make a change. I can't take the risk, right? With the foundation I just set in place, I'm not held captive by anything on earth. When I go to work, and I've said this, like, all I have to lose is my job, right? If you look at my foundation, if I lose my job, I don't lose any of my foundation. My foundation is still there and it's still strong if I lose my job. If I lose my job, the number one thing I lose is my income, right? And of course, I'm not saying that I have great relationships at my job, great people, great leaders. Like, the people I work for are awesome. But at the end of the day, the reason I can make the decisions I make, and if I've made in my career, is because of those foundational components. So I have no fear. Like, because I know at the end of the day too, the number one piece of my foundation, I know he's going to take care of me. And part of this journey isn't, we just talked about this. People think, you know, having God on your side is being on a cruise ship. No, having God on your side is being on a battleship, right? At times waters are calm and it's good. At times waters are rough and you have to go through trials in life because he's conditioning you for something. And if you look at my career, and that's why I say, I think I have maybe the most scars of most people you're going to talk to in this industry, because my journey wasn't, you know, oh, I knew somebody that I got to a certain position. Like, no, I had to work in all of these capacities. And, you know, and he had to humble me in a lot of them as well. Let's just be honest. There's been some occasions where I've been humbled, you know, and I'm grateful for that. And it's, again, my foundation doesn't change at the end of the day. That's what. If your foundation doesn't change, what do you not do? You don't ever supersede other things to where your foundation is no longer relevant. If your foundation never changes, it gives you the freedom to make certain decisions. Because at the end of the day, that's what's important.
So the last question, maybe that's a solid segue about the foundation into your, but the last question is, what's kind of a general rule of thumb that you found to be true again and again and again, quote or something saying that just rings in your ear?
Oh man, I've got so many analogies and quotes and things like that. But I would say I think I've harped on the be a good human for this whole hour and a half that we've been talking. But I do think that the knowledge component is just extremely important, right? And what's your ultimate goal, right? If you got your foundation, what's your ultimate goal at the end of the day? And you know, for me, and I'm not criticizing anyone else's goal, but for me, it's this never-ending journey of knowledge and wisdom. Because when I do things, I always look back and say, why did I just learn that? Right? I'm doing some stuff at Mariner right now that's way outside of my normal, like, things that I've done in my career. And some people are like, why am I doing that? I'm not good at that. But I'm seeing where I can help with that. But I'm now like, okay, I'm doing this for a reason. Like, I'm learning something new for a reason. And it could be something that I may apply to a completely different part of life or a different part of my journey a year, 2 years, 10 years down the road. But I'm learning something different. So for me, that journey of knowledge and wisdom, I would say, if for me, like, being grounded in that helps me continue to grow, right? And it's not a status or stature thing. It's not a job title. It's not anything. All those things have just been like ancillary. That's awesome. Great. I'm a chief. Someone asked me, like, tell me about how your journey to a chief. I'm like, I can tell you all the things I did, and I just ended up being a chief. Not that I had some plan to be a chief, if that makes sense. And I've had so many people tell me, like, oh, when I was in college, I knew I wanted to be a COO. I knew I wanted to be this, and I knew I wanted to be that. Like, you're where I wanted to be. I know a lot of people that are older than me now, they're like, when they talk to me sometimes, like, how did you get there? And I didn't, because that was my goal. And I'm like, I hate to tell you this. That was never my goal. My journey's always been take on the next challenge, always learn, add to your toolkit, knowledge, wisdom, that ever-ending journey. And these are the things that have come along with it, if that makes sense. That's the path for me. These other things have been the fruit of my path, not that was my target. And at the end of the day, who knows what's going to happen? That's when you say, what do I want to be when I grow up? I'm on the journey, man. If we'll see, to be honest with you, I joke with people. I might be a Walmart greeter in the next 2 years. I don't know. Like, it's almost, I don't know. It's just kind of, again, it's free when you have that foundation and when you're in tune with the path. So that's all I can,
If I
that's all.
ever see you greeting at Walmart, I'm joining in. That'll be
Come
fun.
on, let's do it. Hey, I love people. So I'm,
Let's do it.
yeah.
All right. Well, Kenny, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure having you.
This is awesome, man. And this is my first podcast, by the way. And I've never done anything like this. Hopefully, whoever's watching, I didn't bore you. And yeah, it was
I
fun.
doubt you bored anybody. All right. Thank you,
All right.
everybody.
All right. See you later.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.